Welcome back, listeners and viewers, to episode two of our series with Kelly Crabb at Honor Education and Dr. Joseph Orgel at the Illinois Institute of Technology, where we're talking about how do you take learning next level. And Dr. Orgel was sharing with us that two things are very powerful in this move to advance the way we educate each other. And one is AI, and the other one is focusing on durable skills and focusing on the learner. So Kelly, I want to bring you into this conversation. How are you looking at those central challenges and questions as you reshape a learning experience at Honor? How are you looking at, you know, we've got to improve something because so much of online learning, it's been effective at what I would describe it, checking the boxes. You need a certification program. You need to be licensed in something. You need to demonstrate your knowledge and awareness of this information. Great. You've done that. You check a box. But very little of it, frankly, being a little bit critical here, it really delivers on the promise of an engaging experience. And so I think bringing student engagement and a learning model that's focused on the learner, I think are keys to how we build our way out of that sort of check the box online learning. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're hitting on a couple of key things. I think traditionally we've thought about pathways as though they're all linear pathways and that an individual comes from high school to college to career. And increasingly we're appreciating, I think collectively as a learning community, that lifelong learning is not linear, and that rather we have a whole group of individuals. You mentioned earlier, you know, the 36 million individuals who are seeking college, or I'm sorry, rather high school diploma, and 40 million with some college, no degree, who are seeking different and unique pathways, especially in the emergence of skill-based learning and new jobs and skills that are required in order to be competitive in our marketplace. And so the ways in which we as a learning community deliver that in an online learning experience need to reflect a more modern approach. And what I mean by that is, you know, you mentioned AI as an example. I think that we've had a discussion about learning as though it's an either or. It's either, you know, we deliver a MOOC where everyone is hands off and people are just on their own for learning, or we have this really high touch cohort based learning experience. And, you know, we talk about AI or human, you know, intervention. And really what we need to recognize is that it doesn't need to be an either or. The way that we're working on AI and the learning experience within Honor is AI and human connection, really using technology to facilitate more of that connection between instructor, peers, and content. Joseph, you said it, we can't displace, you know, the instructor and the experts out of the learning. If anything, we need to make sure that the technology is fading into the background so that the learning and the connection and the community can really take center stage.
It seems to me, Joseph, that the learning is also going to be enhanced when we can free up scholars in the classroom to do what they do best and have more of the administrative and more of the other aspects of a course handled by technology so that their time isn't spent. You know, I was talking to a professor at Wayne State yesterday who was using a large learning management system, and he changed some questions in his quiz. And as a consequence, when he uploaded those, he lost all the previous records of those student quizzes. And so what he had to do is reload every individual quiz that a student had taken for that semester into their student record. Now, he had an administrative assistant to do that, but that's a punishing amount of very banal work that didn't need to happen when you know, and in that particular case, you have an over-engineered system that doesn't accommodate making changes and making it fluid. And I was just arrested by that example because I hear them all the time as people are using these large systems that they become cumbersome, that they actually aren't a technology enhancement. They're a tool that is outlived in some respects its usefulness. And so that's what excites me about the work you guys are doing, because you're talking about getting to the heart of learning with supports that can help the student accelerate their learning. At the same time, I want to go back to this idea of durable skills. So in a skill-based world, we've talked about any number of things, you know, and they started out being called soft skills, then they were called power skills, now they're being called durable skills. But let's define our terms here. Joseph, how would you describe those durable skills, which are essential to a modern day prescription for how we educate people?
I'm going to pick up immediately on that point you were making about that busy work, because I'm telling you, I didn't get into, you know, tripping the light fantastic in science, or being that professor that people really want to learn from. I didn't get into that for the administration. But at the same time, I think it is worth noting that a really good scientist was doing the washing up when they discovered penicillin. So that there's a balance with what we're approaching. Durable skills, I would say, are skills that are transferable. So they're fundamental skills that you can reframe. And that's actually one of the things we get into in our preprint when we're talking about frames, and we give names and terms to things and give experiences through skills training workshop, not information transfer workshops, meetings where you're updated in a linear fashion where everybody wishes they were someone else, or someone else or somewhere else, actually. But in this instance, really working on having impactful experiences that give an opportunity to practice a skill and get feedback on how that practice of skill worked, and then to have the confidence to go off and practice on their own. That is an encapsulation of how we build these units of durable skills. And when you work at the very fundamentals of the durable skills, like I've just put up a young mentor to be a certified peer mentor in our system just the other day, and they were relating to me that the first thing that has been the most powerful for them is what we call active listening. Next one is the active talking, right? And we take these for granted, but just because we all know how to kick doesn't mean we're professional soccer players or that we're talented MMA competitors, right? But we've got a fundamental skill that will transfer into different applications with the right contextualization and with good support. And to finish off this little bit of thought, humans are built to need other humans. We're really good at making it by ourselves, but we're supreme when we're together. And our neurology is built in a way where affirmation at the right time transforms and electrifies our thinking and our performance. We've even got quantifications for it. We sometimes call it the placebo effect, right? Mm-hmm. But it's that well-quantified understanding that when there's belief in each other and there's belief in yourself, there's a huge boost in capability and effectiveness. And when you build our systems around that, especially for learning and building those durable skills, we make ourselves smarter, both individually and together, especially when we work on the fundamental durable skills of effective and affirmatory empathetic communication.
You know, that's really interesting. You know, Kelly, I want you to follow on this idea that as you're learning and interacting with others, it seems to me one of the things that you discover upon interacting with fellow students is how much they disagree with each other. And a lot of times when students start out at early age or early in their learning, they are afraid to confront differences. And it seems to me that you guys are arguing for a more immersive experience for students where they actually engage with each other and through those disagreements, engage their way to a different and better understanding of the experience or the skill that's required. They may come at it from different ways, different angles, but I think that immersive experience actually is the prescription for our fragmented, polarized societies. If you teach people that skill, it morphs into Working through conflict. It works through working with people who have different, you call them disabilities, but I call them superpowers, you know, and it also helps you work through people with massive differences. Kelly, how would you characterize that experience in the learning environment?
Conversation. At Honor, we call them skills that endure. And so the durable skills, things like critical thinking and taking a moment to appreciate why something is important or interesting or debatable, right? You know, taking a moment to facilitate conversation among peers. When we're in a classroom environment and we can see one another, we have the benefit of being in class and I can hear Joseph say something really intriguing that maybe I wouldn't have thought of that, and it sparks something, right? And it helps me make connections to other examples that I might not have thought of on my own. And so we are very much focused on creating these moments of engagement that have those same sparks within the online learning environment, not through sidelining conversation or a siloed dialogue that maybe takes place in more of a linear threaded discussion, but right within the moment of the learning. Right within the experience itself, which is really when so many of us have those sparks, you know, that help us draw connections and learn from one another. The other durable skill, I think, is, you know, subtle, but it's time management and staying on track. And I think often we picture an online learning environment of learners maybe feeling alone or not knowing how to go about their learning, having to sift through a lot of different links to find what they need. And so, again, kind of, you know, taking away that noise, empowering individuals with, you know, with and through AI and other ways to help stay on track, manage schedules, optimize around their world, not just try to compromise the things that they may need to do with work or balancing family or the other competing priorities in their life for learning, to really make it a more integrated experience.
You know, when I think about it, I chance upon a student that I provide a lot of ad hoc career advice to recent college graduates to help them, because I did talent management for 20 years. And so I helped them to see what the interview is actually asking them. And I had an opportunity to do this with a young woman who was extremely, extremely bright. She had a 4.0 in forensic science in undergraduate, but she had gone almost 10 years without a job in her field. And as I explored more about why that was the case, I asked her a couple of questions in the interview. I said, how did you do in your capstone course? And she said, what do you mean capstone course? And I said, the course you took where all the things you learned in forensic science were then applied to how you might explore a job in that field. And where you might start and where you might end, you know, and where you might begin to demonstrate competency from that learning. And she said, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, that's the point I want to make. I think the reason why you've been struggling is because no one's helped you to connect those dots. And I looked at that as a referendum on the education. This was a small liberal arts college she went to. You know, I think that's part of the miss. Is that I think liberal arts is a great preparation for work in an enterprise, but you have to be able to articulate to an employer why you believe that, you know, why you believe that to be the case. And so, Joseph, I would stand this question up to you. How do you take those learning experiences and make them connective to the work experience in such a way that a student like that with a high GPA and demonstrating competency in their field actually learns how to synthesize those into their next chapter, which is work?
They should be doing it before they've graduated. I mean, otherwise you've set it needs to happen. So order the learning and the training in such a way that maximizes the efficiency and empowers them the most. So by all means, what's the joke? Difference between a good student and a bad student is a good student forgets all of the material after the exam. Right? So, yeah, but it's very cynical. And much better to structure the culture so that the thrill and the feedback and the enjoyment of learning and achievement is intrinsic to what you're doing. And taking assessments is a necessary exercise that is at worst neutral. Maybe even better, the assessments are powering the learning, and they are a capstone experience in of themselves as well. I am very fond of capstone experiences, and I like to use them in the plurality rather than just the singular. But also, you can do that by making sure there are internship experiences that are built into the education. I myself at Illinois Tech would build one of my classes in particular would be a simulator of being part of a scrappy, well-financed startup company, or if you prefer to imagine it as an experimental new division where marketing and R&D personnel are put together in the same experience. And I'd run the class, and I would say to the participants, I know they had to interview to get into the class. They were all going to get into the class, but they had to go through the experience of being interviewed to get into the class. And role-playing, being in the business through the semester, helped them formulate the instruction of the class, and they learned the business management, the workflow, the funnel. They had to phone potential customers and take the feedback and build that into the design of what they're doing. We're talking about ultra high light microscopy, high resolution light microscopy, or designing viable tissue transplants. And I actually changed the topic on a regular basis, but kept the structure the same to generate that experience. But the formulation of talking and integrating, this is well known, but poorly practiced in general, you know, as a whole. And so we can develop tools that help our colleagues and our peers and our customers to follow good practice. And that is one of the things that a good tool does, is help get the practitioner to practice their skill at best, and an apprentice practitioner to learn the skill as they learn to use the tool.
You know, the brilliant students out there, the people that are designing human tissue reaugmentation, and they're designing 3D printed replacement organs and body parts. You know, these are extremely bright people who, in many cases, if you go back to that designer, you go back to that person, you recognize immediately they are really turned on to learning. They have the deep inquiry that you've expressed here today, Joseph, and that's what fuels them. And it seems to me that what you guys are architecting is the similar system that parallels that for those that may not have that same intense curiosity, but can still be inspired enough to pick it up and go through a learning experience and start out saying, I really didn't want to go to school. I really didn't want to do this. And came out and saying, oh my gosh, there's all this possibility. Yeah. Kelly, how would you address that as we take the you know, as we take the tools forward? How would you take that piece of it forward?
It's interesting because I think that there's a lot of people who may have the curiosity but may not know what they don't know in order and what questions to ask and where to explore. And I think that technology can play a key role in helping be a connector for some of those experiences that you both mentioned, both how do we identify people's interests? How do we understand the ways in which they're engaging and where their strengths may be, and help connect to internship experiences or mentors or career path opportunities, right? And one of the ways in which technology, I think, can play a key role is through really clear and actionable data and analytics. And today, you know, we talked earlier about the tech stack ecosystem in higher education. You kind of see the visual of all of the different technologies that live within an institution, and it makes you sort of, you know, lose your breath for a second. You know, but I think as we move toward more integrated technologies, we can have less fragmented data, begin to understand the ways in which individuals are engaging, the ways that they're reacting, you know, at the course level, at the topic level, within content. And that might help inform really personalized, immediate, on-demand, not only student support, but ways that we can connect people to some of those opportunities and really scale mentorship. You know, Joseph, you mentioned earlier some really great innovations around being, you know, building a program and a connector for mentorship. And the way I see it, I think technology can take some of those concepts and really scale them in a way that drives massive impact.
You know, you guys have both underscored one of my chief weaknesses, and that is when I'm around intensely curious people, I can't seem to end the conversation. I started this with Joel Padolny, who's the founder of Honor, and I started out with a half-hour coffee meeting that was scheduled with him, and that first conversation ended up going 4.5 hours. And it's because of his intense curiosity and inquiry that we kept the conversation going. And I feel the same way about this conversation today. So the only solution I have is to invite the two of you to come back, because we're going to wrap on this episode of Disrupt Ed, but we've got to continue this conversation because I think you're really touching on the promise of education with the promise of new technology. And it's a very exciting and disrupted time that we're talking about, in a very disrupted place in a good way. So closing thoughts, Joseph and Kelly, before we wrap.
Back at you, Ron. Looking forward to doing this again for the next episode. And I think our best resource is both ourselves and each other.
Love that.
Absolutely. Kelly? You know, we talked a lot about collective learning and collective solutions and collective partnership. And so I love, you know, the opportunity to be here today, you know, with you, Joseph, and hear about the fantastic work that you're doing. And Ron, you know, I always love listening to the conversations and the connections that you're drawing with people, driving massive impact in space. So I'm very grateful to be a part of the conversation.
Well, thank you to both of you. And this is Disrupt Ed, where I have been talking with Kelly Crabb, the Senior Vice President of Honor Education, and Dr. Joseph Orgel, the Vice Provost at Illinois Institute of Technology. What a joy it's been to have you both on the show. To our listening and viewing audience, get engaged with this conversation. Share your comments, share your feedback, share your ideas for questions for the next episode. And do me a favor, get disrupted with us. Until the next time, thanks for joining us.